It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we'll get the latest news from a reporter who's been covering today's protests in Madison over the police shooting of an unarmed black teenager on Friday night.
First, we're getting another take on the passage of right-to-work legislation making headlines in Wisconsin.
Earlier today, Governor Scott Walker signed that legislation into law, making Wisconsin the 25th right-to-work state. The bill bans labor contracts that require workers to pay union fees. The measure was moved quickly through the state legislature. It passed both the Senate and the Assembly last week.
On Friday, we spoke with a union member in Wisconsin about how this legislation could change his life. Now we're talking to a Wisconsin business owner who supports right-to-work legislation. Rich Musen is the chairman, president, and CEO of Badger Meter. Governor Walker signed the bill at their Milwaukee factory. He's also co-chair of the Water Council. Rich, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, Rich, what was your first reaction when you initially heard that Republican lawmakers were considering right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin?
Well, I was very supportive of it, and I thought it was a very positive move. I think Wisconsin has been behind the times, and this is good for the state. It's good for it will improve our competitiveness. And one of the concerns I had was that Wisconsin would become an island in the upper Midwest, especially when Michigan, Indiana, and Iowa all adopted right to work.
The bill moved very quickly through the legislature. Critics said it didn't allow for a debate at all times. Were you surprised by how quickly the bill passed?
No, not really. I think Senator Fitzgerald knew he had, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, I'm sorry, knew that he had sufficient votes, and I don't think he wanted to drag it out and go through another situation like he did with Act 10.
Governor Walker signed that bill into law this morning. How do you see that affecting you personally as a business owner?
Well, personally, I don't see it affecting me very much, but I think it affects my business quite a bit. And that's why we were pleased that the governor signed it here. I think this gives our employees a choice whether or not to join a union. I think that freedom to choose is probably a good idea.
And specifically, will you be making changes at Badger Meter based on right-to-work legislation?
We won't be making changes at Badger Meter per se. In other words, our current contract runs through the end of next year, so this law has no impact on that contract. When the law does pass, I'm fairly confident that most of my employees will opt to continue to be in the union and will continue to pay their union dues, and we will continue to have a union. We will have some employees who will probably opt out and decide not to pay their union dues. The more direct impact on Badger Meter is that we have, over the last 10 years, added quite a bit of work in other locations. We have plants in Oklahoma. We have plants in Scottsdale. We have a plant in Nogales, Mexico. And we've added work there. Now, with Wisconsin on the track it's going, this is just another factor in Wisconsin's favor in saying that we should consider adding more work here. And indeed, we are going to be adding one particular product line here that will eventually employ 30 to 50 people.
And are you putting that, the change you just described, developing this new meter here in Wisconsin, are you doing that because Right to Work has been signed?
We make our production location decisions based on a lot of factors. It's based on the capability of the plant, the productivity of the plant, but also on the future of the state in which we're operating and the business climate of the state. So I wouldn't link Right to Work directly to it, but what I would say is that Right to Work is one more factor in Wisconsin's favor for people who are deciding where to produce work and where to create jobs. And we think Wisconsin is on the right track. We like the direction it's going, and we think this is a good place to create jobs.
You said that you think most of your employees will continue to pay union dues and that your company will continue in the track that it's going. Is that what you've heard from your employees? Do they, in general, from what you've heard, support right-to-work legislation?
That's two different questions, whether they support right-to-work legislation and whether they will continue to pay union dues. We have about 120 union workers here in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is our only union plant. And of those 120 workers, there's only a handful who have opted not to join the union. Now, of course, under the current laws, they still have to pay dues, but they've opted not to join the union. And I think once the law passes, they will opt not to pay union dues because they simply philosophically don't believe that the union brings them value. On the other hand, All of our other workers have joined the union and believe the union does bring them value. And I like that choice. I think we'll continue to have that choice, and the employees will continue to choose to have the union. As long as the majority of them are choosing that, we'll continue to have the union, and so will other companies.
Critics of right-to-work legislation say it can lead to lower wages for employees. What is your response to that argument?
I don't see that. In our case in particular, once employees start opting out of the union, we will pay them the exact same wages we pay the union employees. And in fact, we have another plant here in Wisconsin, down in Racine, which is non-union. Those employees receive the same benefits and the same pay scale as our union workers here. So we don't see a difference there. Now, I don't know what other companies will do, but frankly, most companies in Wisconsin do not set their pay scale and their benefits based on some union demand. They set it based on the market demand, what it takes to attract good people. Another factor that comes into here is that when you're hiring somebody and you're trying to convince them to come to your company, and perhaps they're one of the 88% of the workers in Wisconsin who are not in a union, and people tend to forget that 88% of our workers in Wisconsin are not part of a union, less than 12% are. When they come here and we say to them, well, by the way, you'll be forced to join the union and you'll be forced to pay $800 a year in union dues, a lot of them scoff at that and say, well, I'm not sure I want to take the job here. Maybe I want to go somewhere else. So I think right to work, giving those employees a choice, will make us more competitive in attracting good talent here.
Some business owners have said that their worried training programs affiliated with unions could diminish their supply of skilled employees. Is that a concern at Badger Meter?
No, it isn't, because our union doesn't do any training or recruiting or screening of employees for us. I know there are unions in Wisconsin that provide that service for employers, and those unions are concerned about what's going to happen there, and the employers are rightfully concerned. Although, frankly, if the union provides that value and the employees perceive it, and the employers perceive it as a value, the employees will certainly want to fund that and continue that value or find another place to gain it. In our case, the union doesn't provide that service at all, so I'm not really concerned about losing anything there.
As a business owner, have you heard from other business owners that they're also pleased with the business climate that Right to Work could create in Wisconsin, as you said you are?
Oh, definitely. And I think you saw it when the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce came out very strongly representing their members in favor of right to work. I think the next question you might ask is, well, then why weren't a lot of other business owners out there vocally supporting right to work? And I think the answer to that is that, you know, in this day and age where we are so polarized, anybody who comes out in any position gets vehemently attacked from either the left or the right. And so a lot of them just don't want to make themselves lightning rods. The attitude I've heard from a lot of business people were, why march into a battle for a war that's already won? Right to work's going to pass. Why would we want to become a lightning rod? So a lot of business leaders did not come out vocally in favor of it, but they did express their support through organizations like the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce.
And yet you're here on the radio. Why did you decide to be public about your support of Right to Work?
Well, maybe I've got a little thicker skin, and the fact of the matter is, I felt there was a lot of misinformation out there. When I started seeing people trying to link infant mortality rates to right to work, I just thought this was getting way out of hand. My own employees were getting some very bad information about what would happen when this bill passed, that all of a sudden there wouldn't be a union or that wages would be cut, and I felt it was important that somebody come out and say, no, that's just not true. And in fact, in our case, it is one more factor that encourages us to add jobs here in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin Congresswoman Gwen Moore issued a statement in which she said Governor Walker has damaged his credibility by passing this last bill, even though he said he would refrain from advocating for legislation like this. Do you think there is something to that? Has Governor Walker damaged his credibility by signing this bill when he indicated that he wasn't interested in taking it up?
No, I don't think he has. I think when you look at what the governor said he was not going to provide the leadership on it. He was not going to push for this. He was not going to drive it. But he never said if it hit his desk, he wouldn't sign it. In fact, in the past, he has supported right to work. And so this was not driven out of the governor's office. This was driven out of Robin Voss's office, out of Majority Leader Fitzgerald's office. This is where it came from. And the governor said, if it, and obviously when the governor saw that, he said, if it gets passed, I'll sign it.
Do you have any predictions for what legislation like this will mean for the future of unions here in Wisconsin?
I really don't know. I think, frankly, that that the unions may, we may be very surprised at how well the unions do, because the unions will now be in a position where they will be forced to convince their members that they're bringing value. And if they do a good job of that, I think they could actually see membership grow. Let's remember, in Indiana, since Right to Work passed, union membership has actually increased. So I think if the unions do a good job convincing people, convincing their members that they bring value, you could see a real positive outcome from this. But they're going to have to do that. Frankly, you represent Wisconsin Public Radio. There are a lot of people who support Wisconsin Public Radio. There are a lot of people who enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio without providing any support at all. And the unions like to talk about people who are taking a free ride and stuff. Well, it's your job as Wisconsin Public Radio to convince people that they should support you. And you do a very good job of that. You raise money and you stay on the air. I think the unions could do the same sort of thing.
Rich, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, you're welcome.
We've been speaking with Rich Musen, Chairman, President, and CEO of Badger Meter. He was with us to talk about the past Right to Work legislation as of this morning. We're getting the latest news on protests over the police shooting of an unarmed black teen in Madison on Friday night. Officers were responding to a call about a man wandering in and out of traffic, according to Madison Police Chief Mike Koval. Koval said the officer followed the teen to an apartment and forced entry after hearing a disturbance in the home. According to Koval, 19-year-old Tony Robinson assaulted the officer, who then shot and killed him.
Almost immediately, crowds started forming at the crime scene. Since the shooting, there have been several protests and community meetings. Today, there were staged walkouts at several Madison high schools. Here's a clip from one of those walkouts.
We are Tony Robinson!
We are Tony Robinson!
I am Tony Robinson!
I am Tony Robinson!
And we stand divided, we stand!
We might and we stand divided, we fall!
We might and we stand divided, we fall!
We might and we stand divided, we fall!
Here now to tell us what's going on today is Mary Spacuzza. She's state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's been covering demonstrations in Madison today. Mary, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So can you give us a roundup of the various protests, demonstrations planned around Madison today?
Sure. Well, large groups of students walked out starting at about a little before 10:30 in the morning. Hundreds from Madison East marched along East Washington and entirely closed the road. They were joined by some students from O'Keefe Middle School. They marched to the Capitol, also stopped by Willie Street, where the shooting occurred, and then came to the Capitol and met with students from UW-Madison and other schools. The rotunda was really full and quite loud with the chanting from protesters. And then after gathering at the Capitol, they left, marched along State Street, and then went to the city county building where Mayor Soglin came out to speak to the crowd.
About how many students, and I understand this is high school, as you say, middle school students and some UW students, how big was the protest?
It sounds like the state was estimating about 1,500 inside the building at the peak of it, which was probably just after noon.
So throughout the day following these protests, how would you describe the mood of what's been going on?
You know, I think a lot of the protesters were certainly angry and concerned. They were peaceful from everything I saw. I did not hear of any arrests. We're checking on that to make sure. But a lot of people were chanting, you know, I am Tony Robinson, we are Tony Robinson, chants of no justice, no peace, arrest the police, things like that. So definitely a lot of frustration, but I did not see any violence. And police were actually helping to close the streets for protesters. You know, these are major roads to East Washington, South First. So police were there, but I didn't see any incidents.
I wanted to ask about that. A lot of people have been watching and comparing and contrasting Madison's response to these protests with protests in Ferguson, Missouri after the shooting there. Sounds like less of a confrontational approach would be an understatement.
I would say so, and I asked Mayor Soglin about that on Saturday night, asked about the comparisons to Ferguson, and he said that he did not want to reflect on that. He wanted to be focused on making Madison the best place it could be for all residents. There have been some people saying Madison is not Ferguson. For example, the police chief and Mayor Soglin went to talk to Tony Robinson's family on Friday night, early Saturday morning, in the wake of the shooting. The police chief, Chief Koval, put out a statement today apologizing to the family and saying, you know, I'm sorry, reconciliation cannot begin without my stating I'm sorry, and I don't think I can say this enough. And said that he hopes with time Tony's friends and family can, I think he said, search in their hearts to render some measure of forgiveness. So Mayor Soglin's comments, he did not apologize. He tried to kind of address larger issues of racism, school funding, things like that. I would say he was kind of shouted down by the crowd at times. For example, when he said the death of Tony Robinson, others in the crowd who would protest, who the protesters yelled murder. They wanted him to call it a murder, which he did not. So he spoke briefly to the crowd.
Who were some of the other either political figures interacting with the protest today or community leaders leading it? Who did you see there?
I saw quite a few, a lot of students, actually, a lot of organizers from Young, Gifted, and Black. Some organizers from Milwaukee were also there. I did see some of Tony Robinson's family members. However, they were there more observing. I didn't see them marching. And then some of his friends actually joined in a car, and it seemed like his closest friends were in the car kind of leading the marchers along East Washington and Willie Street.
You mentioned at least some protesters coming from Milwaukee. Are you seeing much in the way of out-of-the-state media showing up to cover this, looking at this as the next step in this national issue going on?
Definitely, yeah. Outside the shooting scene, I've seen quite a few TV trucks. I've seen national media coming in. I don't know every station that was there, but I definitely saw some unfamiliar faces from outside of Wisconsin who had come in to cover this.
And is this a theme you're seeing from protesters, not just that this is a local issue, but connecting it to all the stories we've been hearing about around the country over the last year or two?
Yes, definitely. A lot of the Young, Gifted, and Black protesters and others were saying, comparing this to Ferguson or New York or other incidents where unarmed Black men have been shot and killed by police officers.
And there have also been protests going on since almost just after the incident itself on Friday night. What kind of things did we see over the weekend?
Over the weekend, it seemed like people gathered pretty quickly on Friday night. Over the weekend, there was a meeting at 10:30. There was a rally around noon, another community meeting at about 4 p.m. that drew a large number of community leaders, church leaders. Mayor Soglin was there as well. And people read a statement, the family members read a statement from Tony Robinson's mother, and then people took turns at the microphone talking. So that was through the weekend. There were candlelight vigils. I would say this has been the biggest protest that I've seen in the wake of this shooting so far.
And is there expected to be a continued protest presence through the week?
It sounds that way. It sounds like I believe there's going to be a meeting tonight that some protesters were planning on attending, if not possibly interrupting. I'm not entirely sure what the plan is, but it does sound like this is not the last protest we've seen and that they might continue to grow from here.
Now, you mentioned that Police Chief Mike Koval had apologized in a statement. What else are we hearing from him and police leadership in Madison about the incident and about the protests and how they're dealing with that?
You know, he put out the statement, which I thought was certainly different than what we heard coming out of Ferguson. Brad Schimmel put out a statement, our new attorney general put out a statement kind of outlining a little bit more about how the investigation into the shooting is going to take place. I know Representative Mark Pocan, our congressman from Madison, put out a statement saying basically that there are more questions than answers right now, and he wants to make sure there's a open dialogue and that, you know, these questions are answered. Governor Walker put out a statement that his thoughts and prayers were with the family and everyone involved, and that he noted he had signed a bill last year that basically calls for independent investigations into officer-involved shootings.
And you mentioned the Attorney General's statement. I'm holding that here. And one key point that the Attorney General and others have made is there's a lot of information they're not going to release in hopes of not contaminating, is the word, I think, potential witnesses.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I think people probably want answers a lot sooner than they're going to get them because they have to follow this investigation process. But I think that they're probably worried about giving too much information before their investigation is complete.
And do we have any kind of timeline on when that investigation is going to get rolling and be complete?
I think it's already underway. I have not heard any kind of updates or estimates on when they'll finish it. I think that they're still gathering information and asking people who have any kind of information to come forward. I have not gotten an estimate on how long they expect that to take.
Mary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's Mary Spicuzza, state government reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's covering the protests and demonstrations today in Madison. You can follow her Twitter feed. She's got a lot of information and photos up there on what's been going on in the protests in the shooting of an unarmed black teen in Madison. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Wisconsin, over the past several years, has been a purple state. It's voted Democratic in the last several presidential elections. And on the other hand, it's elected Republican Scott Walker three times and given large majorities to conservatives in the legislature.
Historically, the roots of progressivism go deep in Wisconsin. To quote from a recent Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article, Wisconsin has been known as the first state to pass workers' compensation and unemployment insurance laws, key birthplace of public employee unions. And conservatism in the state has a history, too. In the late 30s, the state rolled back some union powers a decade before similar legislation, known as the Taft-Hartley Act, passed Congress.
These two strands of Wisconsin have existed side by side down through the decades, but the last 4 years have seen what may be a more lasting move toward conservatism through public policies, legislation, and a dismantling of Wisconsin's progressive legacy. Consider the actions and legislation moved forward by Republicans in the last 4 years. Act 10, restricting the bargaining power of public unions, and the approval of concealed carry law for firearms.
And that's just a partial list. The question on the table, is this a short-term Republican gain, or is Wisconsin in the long run becoming a more conservative state?
Here to consider those questions is Keene Winters. He's a financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Coming up next, we'll be joined by progressive commentator John Nichols from The Nation to talk about it. Right now, Keene Winters is with us. Keene, welcome to Central Time.
Hello, Veronica. Glad to be here.
Well, Keene, looking at the record for Republicans in Wisconsin over the last 4 years, it's a big list, from legislation supporting concealed carry, today's right-to-work law, which was just signed, Act 10. What do you think it says about where Wisconsin is heading politically?
Well, I think pendulums swing back and forth. And right now, I think it's swinging back towards the center after having been leaning left for a long time.
Governor Walker with the legislature, but largely the governor has been championing a lot of legislation that we're talking about. Do you see his positions and politics as a mirror of where Wisconsinites are today on the political spectrum?
I think they may be. What I think has happened too is a lot of politics has been nationalized, and you really have a more national reaction that's drilling down to the local level. It used to be all politics was local. I think there's as time has gone on, advertising campaigns have become more effective. I think we tend to see the national trends that if you correlated the gains of Republicans in the state legislature here, they would correlate very well to the gains of Republicans in Congress.
And to look closely at Governor Walker, you're saying this is a correlation with a national move, but is there something special about Governor Walker that makes him more of a catalyst or a lightning rod in rallying Republicans in Wisconsin to a legislation, for instance, like right to work?
Well, I think Scott Walker is certainly a brave and clear politician. There are people who enter politics and they want to develop relationships, they want to work very slowly, they want to get There's a lot of give and take, you know, and Scott Walker is much more on the get things done. And I think we had a class of 2010 come into the legislature that is on a get things done basis. And I think fairly you would categorize President Obama, particularly in his first 2 years, as a try and get things done kind of guy, and less worried about long-term niceties. And there are pros and cons to both those things. Sometimes if you have the bipartisan support, you've established something that's lasting. On the other hand, it may take a long time to get that, and if you don't get anything done, people are also unhappy.
Now, there are strong Republican majorities in the legislature as well. Is there, and does there seem to be broad ideological agreement between the governor right now and the legislature about where to land on the conservative spectrum right now?
I think you're going to see some differences when the budget is sorted out. I think the governor is, and I think they're all okay with it. And I draw those lessons from being on the city council. We can have debates. And you know, pretty furious debates, and then the next day talk to each other about something else. And for those of us who are in the group, we accept that every idea deserves a worthy advocate and a worthy opponent. And I think you're going to see worthy advocates and worthy opponents within the Republican Party for a lot of ideas, and I think that's healthy.
Now, some moderate Republicans, like Dale Schultz, have expressed concerns about there not being a place right now in the legislature for moderate conservatives in Wisconsin, and that's one of the reasons Schultz stepped down. Is he right?
I don't necessarily think he's right, but there has been a change, and some of it, I don't know if it's generational. I certainly hear that from sort of older Republican statesmen saying, you know, things were different. If you were elected in the 80s, you'd, you know, spend two or three terms getting to know people, then maybe you'd get some legislation out there, you know, versus in 2010, from this area, we had Pam Galloway elected a senator. She was a senator for 15 months before she had to leave on personal issues. She got 15 bills passed, and it's unprecedented. And so, you know, the class of 2010 came in to get things done, and that, while I think that may be a difference, I don't think it's necessarily a bad difference.
And you mentioned, you know, the traditional analogy of politics being a pendulum that swings back and forth. On the other hand, when you look at some of the legislation that's been going through, there's been a lot of it. As you said, it's a get things done sort of mode. Do you see where we are now as being what could be a more permanent move to the right here in Wisconsin? Or do you see it as a for now kind of thing? And you think, you know, as usual, the pendulum may still swing back the other way.
I think the pendulum may still swing back the other way, but I really look at it as a move towards the center. So one of Pam Galloway's signature pieces of legislation was carry and conceal. We became the 49th state to adopt carry and conceal, and since then Illinois has joined us, so all 50 have. That's really moving back towards the mainstream rather than going towards the right. Even if you look at Act 10, which sort of, you know, gives the Scott Walker a lot of lift for being president, you know, you had 9 states that prohibited public unions altogether and 17 that restricted it. At the time when we passed Act 10, we were hardly on the outside. Right to work, we become the 25th state to adopt right to work. See, those things push us back into the middle of the pack rather than to any one extreme.
In a recent Journal Sentinel article by Jason Stein, Bill Krause was quoted. He ran the campaign in office of GOP Governor Lee Sherman-Dreyfus. And Krause said, and this is a quote from the article, "We don't know. What we don't know is whether it's a reflection of a changed Wisconsin or a group in power that have misread their mandate and are more lucky and blessed than right." What do you think in answer to that question?
I don't know that it's necessarily the question to be asking. I think there's a strong tie with what's happening nationally in national politics, and I think there's there's less Wisconsin politics than there used to be and more United States politics. And so I think it is more reflective of a national trend, which could swing the other way. But I think that national trend is going to have more impact than we think. And I think elections in Wisconsin are still going to be very competitive for a long time.
You talk about a national trend in politics, and if you look at one of the big conservative forces over the past several years, it's been the Tea Party, and one of the Tea Party platforms has been to return power to a more local level, to move away from a big centralized federal government. I know you're talking about political trends, but do you see any sort of disagreement there in those two?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the truth is people demand more and more from government all the time, and it's hard to see government shrinking. I think the best we can do at times is really control it, and I applaud the Tea Party impulse to limit government. If we went back to the Progressive Era, so let's go back to 1910, and Progressive Era is about to start in Wisconsin with the 1911 passage of workers' compensation, you would find that state and local expenditures equaled 5% of GDP and federal expenditures equaled 2% of GDP, and none of those government organizations were in debt. Now, if you look at the Economist's most recent rating, the federal government spends 24% of GDP. State and local governments spend 14% of GDP, and we have nearly a debt equal to our entire GDP. And so, it's time for that to move back the other way, just like it was time to grow that and have a better government in the Progressive Era. I think it's time to have government retreat some here in the current times.
Keene, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We've been speaking with Keene Winters, financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau.
Right now, we're considering the question, considering Republican majorities in the Wisconsin legislature, Governor Walker's three-time election wins, the significant conservative legislation that's moved forward in the last 4 years, think of Act 10, concealed carry, abortion laws, right to work. Is Wisconsin taking a long-lasting move to the right? Is Wisconsin's legacy of progressive politics yielding to conservative politics?
We just spoke with a member of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, Keene Winters, and now we turn to the progressive perspective with John Nichols. He's associate editor at the Capital Times and Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine. John, welcome to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, John, when you look at some of that legislation that Rob was just listing there, Act 10, right to work, voter ID law, which is still in limbo, concealed carry, and, of course, the three-time election of Governor Walker, is Wisconsin becoming a conservative state in a way that might be more permanent?
No. In fact,
interview over.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that we have people who have this need, and I'm certainly not suggesting that Keene did, but people who have this need to proclaim everything settled. And I remember when George Bush was reelected in 2004, Karl Rove said, look, we are permanently in this game. We're in great shape. And then when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, very overwhelmingly, there were Democrats running around going, oh, we are permanently in this thing. We got it. And the truth of the matter is that we have an incredibly fluid, constantly evolving politics. Wisconsin has a reputation as a progressive state for reasons that have a lot to do with politics, but not only politics. There are histories of ethnicity, of rural development, all sorts of things that feed into that, education itself. And look at where one of the great kind of linchpins of progressivism came under assault recently, the Wisconsin idea. What did everybody come screaming and running to say? Oh, we're not going to mess with the Wisconsin idea. So the notion that we've permanently gone one way or the other, I think, is it's a romantic notion that may comfort some people. But if you're serious about the reality of the state, what you will know is that this is a state that believes passionately. It can be very right-wing, and it can be very left-wing. And I know some people like to say, oh, we're going toward the middle. It's very rare we find that middle.
Right, and that is what Keen Winter said. He sees this as a representation of a move to the center more than a move to the right, and he cites other states, many of whom, you know, have adopted concealed carry and right to work. Wisconsin's the 25th state. So mm-hmm. is there a case to be made that Wisconsin is moving center, not right?
No, these are very right-wing policies. Wisconsin has moved right. We are in a right-wing moment. We should not fantasize that it's something different than that. And amazingly enough, many of my conservative friends felt in the 1970s and early 1980s, whoa, this state has gone so far left, we can't recognize it. And the reality is that we have been in both places, sometimes in very rapid succession. In the mid-1930s, Phil La Follette was the governor of Wisconsin and leading the country on progressive, and I would argue even often very left-wing legislation. And then 1938, Julius Heil, a big businessman from Milwaukee, got elected. He started ripping it all up, undoing it all. And then, you know, 4 years later, Orland Loomis got elected and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to run through all the governors, but what I want to tell you is, you know, we've gone left, we've gone right. We had, if you can imagine it, you had a La Follette in the U.S. Senate representing Wisconsin. He was replaced by Joe McCarthy. Left, right. And then when Joe McCarthy went, he was replaced by Bill Proxmire. A year later, Gaylord Nelson's elected, and suddenly we're in the glories of progressivism.
And yet, if you look at some of the legislation passed, it's been very striking in its scope. Look at Act mm-hmm. 10, for instance. That would be a hard one for Democrats to come back and restore. Does that make it harder for the pendulum to swing? Is that something Democrats should be thinking about?
I don't know how hard it is to restore. To be honest, you know, Indiana back in the 50s did right to work, and then they had the Johnson landslide of 64. Guess what happened in 65? They undid right to work. The fact of the matter is that states do go back and forth. One of the things that people fall into a trap on is the assumption that because institutions that are traditionally associated with progressive politics are weakened, that new institutions will not develop, and that there isn't an evolution in politics. The reality is there is an evolution in politics, and I think unions will remain a presence in Wisconsin. In fact, I think they actually, in some areas and in some ways, will be stronger. We see a $15 minimum wage movement that's very strong in Milwaukee and growing. The Working Families Party is coming into Wisconsin to organize and push on some of these labor progressive issues. So I always believe that if we cling to everything that we had, then yes, people are going to say to us, you know, look, I'm not sure I want more of that. You know, I want change. If we accept that people want change, but I don't think they want, in any kind of realistic way, right-to-work laws. I don't think they want to lower funding for public education, public services, and a lot of things that underpin what's great about Wisconsin. It may take an election cycle or so for people to come around, but there's an awful lot of history that says they do.
You talked a bit about the progressive roots that have gone down through the years in Wisconsin, fighting Bob La Follette, workplace compensation, unemployment. Mm-hmm. And yet right now, does it seem as though the Wisconsin that we are in 2015, that people would like more conservative fiscal policies, social policies, and that maybe some of that is not as resonant with people anymore?
Well, maybe if Scott Walker had run on that in 2010 or 2014, we'd know. But the reality is that Scott Walker ran around in 2014 and kept saying, when he was asked about right to work, oh, I don't want that. I'm not going to go near that. Right? It would undermine and distract and all these negative things. So average person who might actually trust their governor and listen to him, he's telling them, oh, we're not going to do that kind of stuff. And then today there's a picture of him holding it up with his bill, the bill with his signature on it. Now, I don't want to suggest to people that sometimes politicians don't always tell you exactly what they're going to do. But the reality is that we have had some very capable politicians tell us some things, and people have voted the way they chose to vote. But people wake up to things. You'd be surprised how the ricochet occurs and sometimes how quickly it occurs.
Now, Wisconsin is in play, at least as far as I understand it right now, in a big way for 2016, and Democrats seem to need a win here if they would like to retake the Senate. What does this augur for the next presidential election if Wisconsin is moving in this direction? Does this mean that this could change national politics?
If indeed I'm wrong on everything, it could have a change. On the other hand, if we follow the pattern we have since 1988 and we vote Democratic for president, and we've gone through a lot Let's suggest that the state of Wisconsin has voted for some relatively weak Democrats along the way rather than vote Republican. And my sense is that you will see in 2016, on balance, history tells us, Democrat wins the presidential race, high turnout election, likelihood that a Democrat wins the Senate seat. That is not me romantically suggesting something. It is just suggesting what the patterns of this state are.
Just to take it at face value for a moment, that Wisconsin politics are a mirror for Wisconsin people, what Wisconsin people want, and that means Wisconsin is leaning conservative right now, as it seems to be. Why would you think that that is?
Well, if we had a high turnout election where everybody came and voted, I think we'd vote very progressive. I think that our elections are lower turnout. I think we have seen massive inflows of out-of-state money. And we still have much higher turnout than most places in the country, but it's hardly acceptable. But we've seen massive inflows of out-of-state money, which have filled a void as a lot of our media has become weaker, our newspapers thinner, our TV broadcasts more about weather than necessarily about democracy. We end up being inundated with advertisements, very few of which actually tell us anything about conservative politics. They usually tell you that somebody, some Democrat or some liberal, is a bad person, right? We have an immense amount of negative advertising. Again, I think we're in a transition as regards how we communicate about politics, how we communicate in general. In that transition, there are going to be people who can game it. But at the end of the day, I have great confidence in the people of Wisconsin that they will, in fact, sort it out pretty well and, in fact, end up in a relatively progressive place.
And so we've just got a few seconds here, but since we've got you here in the studio, what are your thoughts on the police shooting of teenager Tony Robinson over the weekend?
Well, it's heartbreaking, and it's hard for any city, but I think it's especially hard for a city like Madison that prides itself on hopefully trying to do things better. It's clear that there are real challenges, and today there are thousands of young people who've been out protesting, and to my mind, that's an incredibly healthy thing, because it may not be that the leaders in Madison adopt all of the proposals that the young people who are marching and demanding that we recognize Black Lives Matter, that we recognize needs for reforms and changes in policing, but that pressure will cause Madison ultimately to, I think, be a better place. So it's a dynamic that is painful at this point, but has potential to move us in some good ways.
John, thanks a lot for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with John Nichols, associate editor at the Capital Times and Washington correspondent at The Nation magazine.
The weather is warming up here in Wisconsin this week, but a big winter event just kicked off over in Alaska, the 2015 Iditarod. After a ceremonial start on Saturday, the almost 1,000-mile dog sled race started for real earlier today.
And the race is following a different course than usual this year due to an unusually warm winter. Race organizers decided the path wasn't safe enough, so they started in Fairbanks, which is 300 miles away from the usual starting spot.
Now, just a little over a week ago, we talked to some Wisconsin mushers and trainers for not Iditarod dogs, but for the Door County Sled Dog Project. That's mostly for rescue animals. I don't think any of them are going to be running in the Iditarod, though.
Not that I heard of, but some of them may have turned pro since we spoke to them.
It's a possibility.
I think dogs turn pro, don't they?
Yeah, well, depend if they have a good agent. I couldn't see myself on a 1,000-mile, well, anything, much less a dog sled race in Alaska. You? I know.
I don't know. It
every
has
year,
some romantic appeal for me.
Every year you get a little closer to just cutting bait and
right.
Heading on over to Alaska.
As the owner of cats, I don't think it's exactly in my future, but I see the appeal.
All right, the big cat sled race coming up.